have Mark Maron with Stu Ellicott and Mark Riley here on Air America Radio. It's 6 minutes past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition. Today, Thursday, President Bush wants you to think he's fighting our generation's World War II, only without sacrifice on the home front or a clear definition of victory or broad-based popular support. But outside of that, plus today's liberal agenda, politically correct for your delicate sensibilities. And, of course, I am joined by Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott.
Good morning.
Why would my producer, how are you? Nice to see you. Why would our producer, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to, he comes in, it's 6 in the morning. 6 in the morning. Comes in like, you know, I'm trying to get prepared and act like I care about things. All right? Which I do.
We all know you do.
Deeply, deeply. I care a lot about me. And I care a lot about the world. And my producer comes in, throws a couple emails at me. I'm thinking, hey, great. What a great way to start the show with some great emails from the listeners. Here, let's read one. Least favorite show on Air America. Morning Sedition. Too much fluff and non-interesting guests. Be intellectual. Give us facts and info relating to the election, Iraq, etc. What did this guy listen for 2 seconds? Did he tune in for like a second and go, there's people laughing. I move on.
I've loved our guest recently. You know what? And I've almost finished that Tony Hendra book, Father Joe, about his relationship, long-term relationship. Not that way. His long-term intellectual relationship with a Benedictine monk, a contemplative mm-hmm. Benedictine monk, all during his National Lampoon years and when he was kind of completely messing up his life. It is so well written. It's really fascinating. And all I want to do is go into a corner and finish reading it. He's my favorite guest of the last 2 weeks. So I hope the guy was listening to him, because go and read
the
book.
How do you know it was a guy? How does everybody know this was a guy that said
Hold
that?
Hold on. I'll look. It wasn't. It was a woman.
Oh, I thought Mark said it was a guy.
But here's another one. Dear Mark M., it's already good.
You're so transparent.
Two things. Am I transparent? Am I really transparent? Am I, Sue? Am I really? Look deeper. Feel the hate.
Oh.
Dear Mark M., two things. My 11-year-old son loves your Dream Diary. Hey!
Hey!
I got an 11-year-old fan. So nice. It actually helps me get him out of bed so that he doesn't miss it. Oh, okay.
Uh-huh.
Now I feel better. See how easy it is? See, on one, you've got like, bleh, bleh, the hell with you guys. You guys suck. And the other, oh. I'm still having a paranoia, and I wanted to talk to Sue about this. I get this liberal paranoia.
What kind of liberal
parents? I live in Queens, man. You know, and I really think that the fish guys don't like me anymore. Now I'm starting to think that the real estate agency that I walk by doesn't like me. Because the woman who rented me my house, I told her that I was doing the liberal radio network, you know. And her brother and her father also work in the office. And I swear to God, when I said that I'm doing the morning show on the new liberal radio network, she just literally, it was as if, you know, I just, you know, turned purple or something. She went, like with this weird kind of like, oh. You know, like all of a sudden everything shut down. There could be no talking between us. So now I've got a little paranoia there. But I think the butcher still likes me.
Well, yeah, that's because you had veal for dinner last night. That's why the fish guy is not very. It doesn't like you, because you've been eating too much meat. That's simple.
Yeah. Well, no. I mean, it's my paranoia, and maybe you're right. And I did buy veal, and I fought buying veal because I think veal is wrong. But I also like it a bit. My wife can't even stomach the idea of veal, and I don't know how to cook it. And I don't even know why I'm talking about this. The world is ending, and I'm going on about veal. But I bought some, and I go, how do I cook it? He goes, just fry it up. So I fried it up, and it tasted like leather. And I don't know. And then I read about it.
Fried veal?
I just pan cooked it.
Oh, okay.
You know, this is ridiculous.
Like stir frying.
It's ridiculous that I'm even going on about
Mark Bam Maron.
No, but I want to find out about this whole Queens thing.
I don't know if it's real or if it's just me. I'm just assuming that, you know, because it's primarily old school, working class, you know, people that they, you know, which are the people that should be liberal, really.
Well, you know, go out to Jackson Heights or South Jamaica, Rosedale, or some of these other communities in Queens. Not just Astoria. Astoria is old school immigrant, you know, folks. I mean, I know the guy who used to represent it in the council.
You go out into the Queens with a sign, I'm a liberal, do you like me?
Do you like me, yeah.
Please like me.
Queens Boulevard, perfect place for that sort of thing.
The email address is sedition@airamericaradio.com. And any sort of email that you send me helps me try to get past the fact that some of you don't like me. And it helps me. And also, the people don't seem to Well, you know, you guys don't seem to really bother with it, but
it,
for some
it
reason,
it helps you channel the bile. Admit it.
Yeah. Now I got a lot of bile. I got a lot of bile for our president. For being a spy monger. for bringing Chalabi into his house.
Well, you know, this guy has managed now to dominate the news both in Iraq and in this country. The story of Ahmad Chalabi, America's latest friend turned enemy, is now, it's just blown up all over the place. He is strongly denying published reports that he gave classified information to Iranian officials. The head of the Iraqi National Congress says reports he told Iranians that the U.S. cracked its secret communications code are, quoting here, false and stupid. His defenders in Washington are standing by their man, at least some of them are. It was the president's circle of neoconservative advisors that used Shalabi's so-called intelligence to make the case for a war against Iraq in the first place. We need to always, never lose sight of that fact.
So is Chalabi saying you call me a liar?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Over and over again?
Well, you know, former Pentagon advisor Richard Perle, you may remember him because he was one of that circle.
From the Brethren of Darkness?
Yeah. he is saying that it's inconceivable that Iranian intelligence would use a compromised channel to tell its government that the U.S. had cracked this code, but then there are other stories that say that they continued using the code because they didn't believe Chalabi when he told them that the code had been cracked in the first place. Other defenders say the Iranians may have set the guy up.
Right. Or they wish to ditch Chalabi.
Yeah.
That they used the code on purpose to expose that he had passed on. I mean, it's like everything with Chalabi. Nothing is really very clear, is it?
Nobody likes this guy. That's clear.
It's kind of like the Marion Barry thing. Yeah, I've been set up. You know, I don't know exactly how this is going. You know, he could face criminal charges if he, under certain circumstances, if he ever comes back to the United States for something.
And to Jordan as well, right? Isn't he an embezzler? Won't they give him like 20 years?
Was that
years
Jordan or Lebanon? One of the two convicted him. It was Jordan.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you know the strangest twist on this, though, is that the split, this very strong split with the U.S. administration now, it could paradoxically give Ahmad Chalabi the credibility with the Iraqi people that he up until now has not had.
Oh, that would be truly, truly, truly scary.
Do you really think that would happen? That, you know, all of a sudden they'd welcome him back with open arms? Because
so many people are anti the United States. So the fact that now that Chalabi has this public spat with America, I mean, he's been his stock has fallen over there. They haven't trusted him at all. So, you know, it just could be that the funny sort of little twist at the end of all this is like, hey, yeah, well, maybe he's okay after all.
Well, we thought that
he's been totally marginalized in the establishment of the new government.
Right, by Americans. But we were talking about that last week a little bit, that, like, you know, when he was playing the victim, when he got his house got turned over by the U.S. forces and the intelligence people were coming after him, that he was like, oh, no, the Americans, you know. But I think that being an expatriate that he is and also being that tied in with Iran, I don't think how that could be good publicity in Iraq.
Well, there are right now at least three investigations going on. The FBI has an ongoing investigation during which, by the way, they are giving lie detector tests to civilians in the Pentagon. The CIA is also launching a probe, and National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice has promised the Congress a full investigation as well. Rice tried to put some distance between the Bush administration and their former Iraqi golden boy.
There were a number of organizations with which the United States had a relationship, including the INC. But the president, President Bush, made very clear that the United States had no horse, so to speak, that it was backing in after the liberation. It made very clear that Mr. Chalabi would have to make his way on the basis of his relationship with the Iraqi people, and that's still the case today.
Well, whoa. Hang on a minute. They're giving him $340,000 a month. That's not just making your way on the basis of your relationship with the Iraqi people.
Well, assuming you can't buy your way into a relationship with the Iraqi people. Sounds like Chalabi has fallen pretty far from the perch, perch that he had just this past January when he was standing right behind First Lady Laura Bush at the State of the Union address.
If this were any other president, I mean, come on. The dude's got a spy sitting right behind his wife. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I mean, this guy is like he's dirty business, man. And he's been in cahoots with these neocons for what, years now? This guy was their guy with his little Iraqi National Congress group. Yes. They thought that he was going to be the dude that would enable them to, you know, get into Iraq and set up. And he thought he was going to be set up as president. And it turns out that he lied about weapons of mass destruction, and our administration took his word on that, put our soldiers in jeopardy because of it. And now it turns out he's a spy. This guy is a spineless weasel that, you know, that our administration, that our president welcomed into his house and believed. If this were any other president, this dude would go down. Bush would go down.
Well, if you go back a year, Seymour Hersh wrote a piece in The New Yorker that talks about the fact that Donald Rumsfeld, in addition to having intelligence from the CIA and the DIA, which is the Defense Intelligence Agency, he apparently also had the Shalabi channel, that he was getting intelligence data almost directly from Shalabi in terms of getting that information funneled through the Office of Special Plans, which was a nest of those same neoconservative vipers that were promoting Shalabi in the first place.
It was Shalabi. They set up like a shadow intelligence agency that they called the Cabal, and they were, you know, he was one of their operatives almost.
Yep.
Maybe it could go on cable, the Shalabi channel.
he would love that.
Yeah, he would.
Still ahead, the president's Palm Pilot, plus we'll get a live report from Iraq right here on Air America Radio. Twenty past the hour here on Morning Sedition at Air America Radio.
Very nice. I like that.
I'm with Sue Elcott and Mark Riley. It's morning time.
Brat it.
So, there's that thing that I always think of the facts.
It sounds like a liberal agenda coming up.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah. But it's just a Frank Black screaming weird guitar sounds. Or no, it's not. Sorry, it's the Breeders. I apologize, Kim Deal. All right. Doesn't matter. Beal, Kim Deal, Frank Black. Let's get to the important stuff. Am I extrapolating correctly in that the message that Bush was putting forth last night in his speech to the Air Force cadets was World War III has begun? Am I misreading it?
He was certainly trying to convey a sense of higher purpose in the his war against terror. You mean his speech where he compared the war on terror to World War II, that the Islamic militancy of Osama bin Laden's al-Qaeda is like the aggressive ideologies of the 20th century.
But am I wrong in saying that World War II was fought against countries and that we were actually attacked by a country? And am I wrong in saying that September 11th was not like Pearl Harbor, and that Osama bin Laden, the person responsible for September 11th, declared war on the United States in the mid-90s.
In the mid-90s. But you're getting bogged down in minutia here. George W. Bush does not get bogged down in minutia, especially when he's speaking to audiences of 30,000 in Colorado and of essentially 30,000, supporters. These are people who back the president, by and large. I mean, I didn't see any banners going up, stop the war.
I only saw one cadet he had put a black tape on the top of his hat.
Yeah.
Did you notice that in the footage? There was one guy that had a little black X on, and that was only so his parents could see him, I'm sure. But I wonder if he was going to be reprimanded. But he did. But also, they had the PDB, too. So he's just lying in that, they did know. They did know that war was declared earlier and that it was not the same as Pearl Harbor. And terror is not a country. It's a mode, a way of operating.
But he's trying to do this in broad strokes. He knows that most Americans revere the people who fought World War II. He knows that. He knows
the greatest generation.
Yeah, everybody figures World War II was a just war, both fronts, the Germans and the Japanese. So, you know, he's not going to liken it to Vietnam. He's not going to liken it to Korea. He's not going to even liken it to his daddy's war. He's only got World War II to draw from.
You can't go any further back than that.
Yeah, well, actually, no, Rumsfeld did some weeks ago. Rumsfeld kind of made the connection with the Civil War and was kind of, you know, called on that. It's all this kind of pattern of trying to make it seem as though there really is a kind of a high moral purpose to all of this.
Yeah.
Well, let's listen to our chief executive speak to the cadets at the Air Force Academy.
Like the Second World War, our present conflict began with a ruthless surprise attack on the United States.
Surprise.
Surprise.
Surprise
attack.
To who?
Let's evoke Pearl Harbor.
I got to tell you something, though.
August 6th, they got the PDB.
I said this to you off the air.
Yes, sir.
I saw John Kerry last night, because John Kerry has been, you know, he's been kind of matching Bush step for step in terms of criticizing a lot of the things that are going on, including the whole Shalabee link. But I saw Kerry speaking about something yesterday, and it wasn't at a point where he was being particularly critical of Bush. But it struck me when I was watching him and watching his body language that this is a man who really can restore America needs its credibility restored. I don't care what Bob from Long Island or whoever thinks about the justifications for this war. America's got some repairing to do in terms of its relationship with the rest of the world. And I came to the conclusion last night, A, that George W. Bush cannot do this. He is physically incapable. And that John Kerry is, in fact, capable of repairing that relationship. I just it was something about the way he projected himself.
Yeah, I always felt that he had a certain stature of a guy who could be president. But also, I think the way he's handling his ads now and the way he's handling the Bush problem, as I will call it from here on out, is that, you know, he's being nicer than he should on some level. But on another level, that kind of tolerance and that ability to rise above is probably going to be pretty respectful in terms of, you know, other, you know, leaders.
He's coiling.
Well, yeah. That's what you think. Yeah, you think he's ready to go. You felt something in his body language?
Yep. I felt like he was really kind of, you know, when you see one of those snakes on television.
Yeah.
On a nature show.
Where you're like, uh-oh, get out of the way.
Yeah, and I get a sense that, you know, that whole thing about Kerry being a great closer, it dawned on me yesterday that, yeah, he really is going to be, a great closer. And you're going to see this guy, I think, kind of metamorphose into something that we're not expecting right now.
Maybe stick with the racehorse analogy rather than the snake. That might serve him better. But I know what you mean. There's that sense of muscular kind of getting ready.
Smarty Jones in the back stretch.
Absolutely. But what you can't underestimate is how much of a joke President Bush has always been during his whole election campaign in 2000 and, you know, his appointment overseas. I mean, every time you can just pick up at any sort of European paper, you know, centrist or kind of left of center European paper, even the right wing papers, they consider President Bush a joke. They think he's an intellectual lightweight. They thought it was ridiculous the way that he actually got to take office. And, you know, there are nonstop anecdotes of, you know, not just his language mangling, but there's no way that America looks good abroad with President Bush in the White House.
So you're saying that his credibility has always been doubted because he was not even the real president?
Partly that, and partly they just thought that he seemed so goofy, so, you know, disconnected from the rest of the world, so uninformed, so propped up by big money, unlike Clinton, who kind of knew his stuff, that he was such a quick study, and he was a bright man, and he was a well-educated man. People were just astounded that someone who seemed such an intellectual or poorly educated person, despite going to Yale, his kind of not knowing very much, could lead the United States, and the war and the abuses in the war and how he refused to really take on board the concerns of the international community just left him severely weakened. So Mark's, you know, correct on the Kerry stuff.
Well, I think the other thing is that he has had to go back to the world community in the wake of what's going on in Iraq
and beg.
Yeah, essentially say, look, now he didn't say, look, we were wrong not to include you in the first place, which would have been the smart thing to do. Instead, he just comes back and says, well, we've won this thing, and now you got to help us.
Right, and it's all kind of suppressing their desires to say, well, we told you so.
Yeah.
I just can't stand the reality that so many people in this country believe that this guy is some sort of steadfast, visionary, you know, tough-on-terror kind of person where he does nothing but twist the truth. He does nothing but lie. He expects us to not care that the war was, you know, based on a lie to begin with, and just because he feels that he's having some success in meeting certain deadlines, that we're not going to take him to task for, you know, being in bed with, you know, creepy, lying, spying people, and also for, you know, for completely mangling the truth in terms of, in that speech yesterday, he also was again trying to reiterate a lie that Iraq is, you know, fundamentally connected with terrorism. It was not connected with terrorism until we went in and attacked it.
Well, you know, there's not all that much difference in my judgment between Shalabi and Ken Lay, two friends of Bush's who are no longer. Coming up, the presidential palm pilot, the liberal agenda, and we get a report from the ground in Iraq. This is Air America Radio.
Wake up, wake up, wake up. 33 past the hour. Morning's edition. I'm Mark Maron with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott. It's time now. We just got the dispatch from my dude in the Oval Office who hacked into the president's Palm Pilot. We've got his schedule for today. Presidential Palm Pilot for June 3rd. 8 a.m. Wake up. Jot down any Iraqi exit strategies that occurred to me during sleep. 8:50 a.m. Meet with the Australian Prime Minister, John Howard. Note. Australia is the one with the kangaroos, not the one where Arnold Schwarzenegger is from. 12 noon, lunch with Australian Prime Minister John Howard. Remember the term Foster's is Australian for beer. 1 p.m., thank Australia for their help in Iraq. Make a note to increase imports of breadfruit or whatever it is they grow down there. 3 p.m., take Ahmed Shalabi off of Christmas card list. Note, go through entire Christmas card list and figure out who really should be on Ramadan list. 4 p.m., send congratulations note to Stephanie Herseth, latest congressional Democrat from South Dakota. Note, cut any remaining highway funds for South Dakota. 5 p.m., pose for portrait to be used on Iraqi currency. 7 p.m., call new Iraqi government. Ask if they're working hard or hardly working. 7:30 p.m. Call lawyer about deflecting blame in Novak CIA leak. Find out what I'm supposed to forget. 8 p.m. Call Fox News. Ask them to stretch the Julia Roberts twin story until we're out of Iraq. 9 p.m. Lights out. Fall asleep counting sheep, especially the undecided swing sheep. Does my mic sound like it's going in and out to you out there in your car?
In Radio Land.
Out there in Radio Land. Right now, joining us by phone from Baghdad is Borzu Daragahi, one of our favorite journalists in Iraq today. How are you, Borzu?
I'm doing well, thank you.
What's the reaction to the Chalabi mess? How do Iraqis feel about Chalabi?
I think there's a lot of snickering going on about Chalabi. I mean, he just really doesn't register among many of the people here. That's just not unique to him. It's not just Chalabi, he's just among, Chalabi's considered among a group of exiles who haven't lived here in a very, very long time and who've returned and have made no real attempt to reach out to the Iraqi people, but have spent a lot of time sort of inside the security of the Green Zone trying to lobby the occupation authority for positions and power.
So how do you think the Iraqi people will accept the new prime minister?
I think there's a lot of doubt about the new prime minister. The Iyad Alawi was a former CIA operative, as well as a former Baathist, a member of Saddam's party. He did have a falling out with Saddam at some point, and Saddam apparently ordered one of his executioners to try to kill him. The poor guy spent a year in the hospital in the 70s when he was attacked by an axe-wielding assassin. I think that no one really knows that much about him. In his favor, a lot of people see that he's big on the sort of security issue. He is a former security expert. He's used to sort of be in charge of intelligence in Iraq. And many people are hopeful, wishing that maybe he'll take control of the country in a way that would sort of stem some of the lawlessness, the crime. The homicide rate in Baghdad now is twice that of Bogota, Colombia, and 10 times that of New York City.
Wow.
So that's a very big issue for people.
Borzu Daragahi, now that you're back reporting in Baghdad after some weeks away, could you give us a sense, please, of what it's like being there, of how safe people feel, of what it's like going out, what's working, what's not working, the daily lives of people there?
You know, I'm still shocked. I've been coming here for over a year now, in and out of Iran, and I'm still sort of amazed by the electricity problem. I just don't know why it would take a year to fix the electricity. We get electricity about 12 hours a day. The other times, the place where I'm staying runs on generators. But I feel sorry for the Iraqi people who, in this heat, and it's getting up to like 100 degrees now, don't have access to generators and can't afford to subscribe to private generator services that have popped up. Security seems to have deteriorated from the last time I was here. It's gotten a little better from April, where there was a lot of fighting and really gunfights in the street and U.S. Bombing campaigns underway in various towns and stuff. But there's really, you know, like, for example, I don't have facial hair, and I never have, but I've grown a beard, you know, just to fit in more with the Iraqis. There's a real sense that foreigners, people who are not from Iraq, are in real danger. There seems to be a lot of shooting of foreigners. There seems to be a real move on the part of everyone to kind of disguise themselves. You know, I keep an Arab keffiyeh in my bag just in case. I know women, foreign women and Iraqi women who never used to kind of cover themselves, now cover themselves in an attempt to just blend into the environment. I've seen American contractors kind of trying to dress up like Iraqis and driving kind of unmarked trucks instead of military vehicles and obvious vehicles. So that points to a deterioration in security overall.
Borza, you talked about the crime that's going on the street. To what extent are U.S. forces taking an active role in trying to deal with the crime, or are they leaving it up to this new interim Iraqi governor?
Well, you know, it's really remarkable. I interviewed this this guy. I had a great chat with him. He was he was a school teacher, and some people kidnapped his 4-year-old son. And they wanted like $50,000 from him to give up the kid. And, you know, he didn't know what to do. He didn't have $50,000. So he kind of tricked the kidnappers into coming to his house again. And then he had, at gunpoint, sort of grabbed one of the kidnappers and kidnapped him and held him for 6 weeks until he got his kid back. And I asked him, why didn't you turn him over to the police? And he just kind of laughed. He said, well, if we turn him over to the police or the Americans, he'll be out of jail in 2 weeks. And, you know, then he'll have a real vendetta against me. This way I get my kid back. We settled it with a tribal summit between my tribe and his tribe. So you see the kind of ancient justice coming back in the absence of a real government.
Wow.
Is there any optimism at all in Baghdad now that there's the different factions might come together, Sunnis, Kurds, Shiites? I mean, is it quickly, though?
Yeah, I think that there is some optimism. People need to feel optimism. I think there was some hope inspired by the appointment of this guy as president, as Fazi Yawar. Mm-hmm. He's an Iraqi. He looks like an Iraqi. People seem to like him more than they like Iyad Alawi.
Well, thank you very much, Borzu Daragahi, for joining us from Iraq today. We certainly appreciate it. We've got the liberal agenda up ahead, and we want to know whether you think Chalabi was using the White House or the White House were using him. We'll take your calls at 866-303-AAR0, 866-303-2270. Give us a call. We'll put you on the air on Air America Radio. Four past the hour. I'm jigging right now.
Hey, Caleb.
I had this on my iPod, actually.
866-303-AAR0. 866-303-2270. Was the topic alienating? Well, if you don't want to talk about Chalabi, we can talk about anything you want. You know, you just give us a call. I mean, I'd like to hear what you think about that big bunch of BS that, you know, George Bush dumped on those poor cadets last night. I mean, come on. Come on.
Or just
Where's
whether you can
glory?
Whistle as well as that song.
Also, you know, you can email us at sedition@airamericaradio.com. Thank you for the torrent of emails that came in.
You know, one of those.
It was very nice. It was very nice, Sue. Some people said some very nice things. And I guess I guess I've got to, you know, the cry for help stops here. I'm not. Look at my producer's like, yeah, right. The negative emails, no more reading them. I've been changed. I've been turned around by the supportive listeners out there in the world. This is global.
At least for this hour of the show.
No, this is gonna last. This is gonna last.
I just want to mention one thing about that speech to the cadets. Yeah. Did you catch that bit where he was? There were two things. One that was this one. He lapsed into one of his his poetic bits. He referred to the storm in which we fly. Mm-hmm. That was straining a little bit hard, I thought. But my favorite bit was when he talked about the clash of free societies and totalitarian ideologies, trying to compare this war on terror with the war against Nazism and Hitler. And the thing is, it's the U.S. has been stoking that very clash of civilizations. The U.S. has been stoking the clash between the Muslim and the Christian world with this war. They haven't calmed that down. The war has actually inflamed support for people like Muqtada al-Sadr. And that report that came out last week from the IISS, remember, said that there were now more than, 18,000 potential terrorists in at least 60 countries around the world. Well, I'm sorry that clash, that number of potential terrorists did not exist prior to the invasion of Iraq.
You know what's true, Sue? Is it totalitarian, though? I mean, I sort of like, I don't know. Is there a specific sort of totalitarian manifesto of these terrorists? Is there a singular group that has that? Totalitarianism to me means, you know, uniforms,
it's
architecture. there's a lot of stuff that goes on. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's funny. Bush, I think, tried to clean up the whole thing about the issue of promoting these, the negative ideology with regard certainly to Islam by taking, you know, he used a phrase from Dwight Eisenhower in his speech to the Air Force cadets. And he talked about, the similarities between the World War II and this current situation in Iraq. But he left out the word the Crusades, which Eisenhower used in his original speech.
Yeah, he got into trouble for that before,
yeah,
the Crusade thing. But I think this probably resembles more a Crusade, which is a holy war, than it does, you know, World War II. Should we take a call, or do you want to?
Sure.
Brian in New Jersey, how are you, buddy? Brian?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, what's up, man?
Hi, actually, I was wondering, yesterday they announced that Michael Moore's coming out of the movie June 25th.
Oh, that's good, man. I knew you got new distributors, and now it's coming out June 25th. Oh, that's great. Good timing, man.
Yeah, and actually, I'm real excited, and I was real conservative-minded in my thinkings before actually reading both his books.
Yeah.
And in his last book, he actually mentioned something about the proposed liberal radio network and called it a big, stupid waste of time.
Yeah, so are you...
Actually, I mean, being a big Michael Moore fan as I am, I was kind of insulted a little bit because I really listen to you guys every day and just love every minute of it.
I'm going to have to look for that. Which book is that in, man? I thought he was on our side, man.
Dude, Where's My Country?
Okay, well, it's not a big stupid waste of time. We appreciate you calling, man.
Yeah, and he's been a guest on Al Franken. It can't be that
yeah,
big.
Yeah, he's been on
it can't
Al
be
Frank.
Such a big waste of time because he's been a guest.
I'm just trying to figure out whether he's starting to say something mean or like, did Michael Moore really say that? Now, why would he say that about, listen to me now, everything that just happened with all those emails, now it's like I just got one big slap in the face by Michael Moore. Ken in San Diego. Ken, how are you?
Good morning, everybody.
Morning.
Hello.
I was listening to Bush's speech yesterday, and I didn't get to hear the whole thing, but it seemed like he talked about the prison at Abu Ghraib.
Yeah.
And said something about that we had stirred up a hornet's nest, or people had said we had stirred up a hornet's nest, and he seemed to answer it by saying, there was already a hornet's nest there. Did anybody catch that? Like, didn't that rub you wrong?
He was saying that about terrorism. He was basically trying to dispute the fact that the U.S.-led war against Iraq had stirred up terrorism and had, as we mentioned earlier...
It actually created it. It actually created a terrorist state.
He was trying to make the point that potential was there, or there was already... It's the same thing. It's trying to show that there was terrorism in Iraq when, in fact, there wasn't.
The potential is, I mean, just about anywhere. If you go in and start, you know, killing people and bombing things and, you know, and tearing down dictators, I mean, the potential for terrorism could be anywhere. It could be in Wyoming, for God's sakes. Brian in Pennsylvania. No?
No, Brian.
I was calling to see if anyone heard George Bush ask if he could sit down at the Memorial Day ceremony, before they had the prayer, I swear, he says, can I sit down now? And they said, no, we have the prayer.
You got to stand up for prayer time. You'd think he would know that of all people. Thank you, Brian. So we will be back with the liberal agenda and more things. Thanks for your calls, your emails. I'm going to call Michael Moore right now. Keep listening. Air America Radio. Hey, what's going on, man? I'm in the middle of a serious air guitar solo here. I'm Mark Maron. This is Morning Sedition. I'm with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott.
That's like a riot going on.
So, we discussed earlier my incredible self-censoring liberal paranoia in my community of where I live in Queens. But you say that the shame should be over.
Shame should be over. This is a good time. The front page of today's Wall Street Journal has a report saying that the American left is seeing signs of political revival.
Yes.
Hey, and recent polls show that more Americans are calling themselves liberal, which had, you know, a term of denigration, I would say, and people were embarrassed to use it in recent years, really since kind of Reagan turned it into a dirty word. And fewer people are identifying themselves as conservative. Now, this is showing itself in the amount of fundraising during this election campaign. Traditional liberal groups such as MoveOn.org and the National Organization for Women are having a big surge in fundraising, and the flagship publication of the left, The Nation magazine, is apparently now the highest circulation of any weekly political magazine.
Did you know that The Nation creates a very unique form of liberal guilt? I subscribed to The Nation for a couple of years, and they come like every day, it seems.
Okay? It is a weekly, yes.
I know it's weekly, but like they just like you read a couple articles, and then you put it down, and then the next one comes. So they start stacking up, and each one that stacks up, you're like, oh, my God, I haven't read. There's so much I don't know, and I'm missing out on every. I can't. And it destroyed me, so I had to cancel my subscription. Now I go online and read.
But, you know, that's true of a lot of these meetings. But wait a minute, Sue, did you say traditional organizations like MoveOn.org? I know I didn't hear you say that.
Did I say traditional?
I thought you said
I must have just tripped out of my tongue.
Because, you know, MoveOn.org is kind of recent.
Right. Well, I guess liberal groups. I mean, when I say traditional, I mean in a liberal sense, in the kind of thing that they're promoting, that, you know, government spending to pursue public goals, you know, the more aggressive remedies.
Oh, in other words, the tenets of traditional liberalism.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Yes,
yeah.
So that was kind of a shorthand. You know, anti-war, great skepticism about military spending. I mean, the article does point out that support for Mr. Bush has been slipping in the polls, which we all know, but that Republicans still keep hold of a significant edge on national security issues. But that, you know, liberals seem to be kind of doing kind of pretty well. All those books that have come out recently attacking Bush are selling very well. The Democrats were very proud yesterday because they've now got a U.S. House seat in South Dakota.
Yeah, yeah.
She seems really nice.
Stephanie?
Yes.
Well, you know, see, here's the problem.
We're on first-name terms with her already.
I saw her on TV, and I'm like, well, she seems like a nice lady.
Yeah, but you know what? South Dakota has about just over 600,000 people. A congressional district by law has to be 587,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
So there must only be like one congressperson for the whole state.
There might well be. But you know what? It's a good start. I mean, the ultimate goal really is to kind of tip the Republicans' control of a Congress, isn't it? We don't want that 51-49 advantage anymore.
Oh, so, yeah. And what is it, six
step,
in a house?
Folks.
We're taking it. We're taking it back. James Galbraith said that the polls have nothing to do with anything that happens in the world, that the polls have gone steadily down incrementally over a period of time just because I think people are starting to realize, like, this guy's dirty, we don't like him, this Bush guy's got to go. You know what that is, don't you? That's the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Get your notebooks and your pens. Here we go. One. Urge Maxim magazine to run hot liberal ladies in lingerie spread featuring Hillary Clinton, Barbara Boxer, and Carol Moseley Braun. Yeah.
You guys are going to get that, I can tell. You're not cracking up.
No.
We're going to get some mail
from
the...
They've got you sorted.
Two, urge R.J. Reynolds to change cigarette warning to smoking may be hazardous to your health, but so is underfunding the arts. Three, file environmental impact statement on your decision to plant marigolds by the azaleas. These are good today. Four, organized group outing to Harry Potter film for Wiccans and Warlocks. 5, take kids to Wounded Knee, South Dakota for family guilt trip.
No, I've actually been to Wounded Knee, South Dakota. It's a beautiful
I have too.
Place.
It is amazing. Yeah, and I think they put a new memorial there, I believe, recently.
In the next hour of Morning's Edition, the President and the Pope, Who Killed Ladies' Night, and Marc Maron's Dream Diary. Don't go away. This is Air America Radio.
Hi, I'm Marc Maron here along with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley on Air America Radio. It's 6 past the hour, and this is Morning's Edition.
Good morning. It's Thursday. Today, George W. takes a visit to Recovery Corner because the anonymous in AA doesn't apply to drunken officials leaking military secrets. Plus, is Pope John Paul preparing to bitch slap George Bush? Oh, no. What would Jesus do? That's coming up right now. I'm joined by Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott, and all the Catholics are going to be writing the emails to me.
Give it to the Jewish guy to slam Jesus. That's all I can say.
Hey, you know what I mean? You know, he was a Jew.
Yes, he was.
He just started his own business.
As is Mel Brooks.
Did very well with it, I might add. So the Chalabi guy, this guy, Chalabi,
more trouble than he's worth.
Dude, I just don't understand it, man. If this were Clinton or Reagan, or not Reagan, I mean, it seems like these Republican guys have a really shifty way of hiding their connections with devious criminal sorts. I mean, Chalabi's a spy. This guy is a spy who was was created almost. He was brought into the inner sanctum of government by these neocons.
Your hands are saying molded.
Yeah. Molded. That's it. Molded by he had this little organization, the Iraqi National Congress, right?
And that was little.
Yeah, it was a small organization of dudes with money who were expatriates from Iraq who said, "We're going to be the next guys. We just got to sell this bill of goods to these freaks who are all the disciples of this renegade political philosophy professor in Chicago." So Wolfowitz, Pearl, Rumsfeld all latch on to this Iraqi National Congress cat, who says, "We've got the inside info on what's going on in Iraq. We know there are big old weapons of mass destruction there, and we can guarantee you that if you go in there, get rid of Saddam, kill him, do whatever you have to do, we'll show you right where the weapons are, and then we get to sit in the big house."
That's
okay,
right.
So it turns out, lies, they were lying, there were no weapons. Chalabi's like a two-faced double agent. Now he's an Iranian spy. So we are in bed with an Iranian spy.
Alleged.
I said it. I'm trying to say I don't get boring about it, but he's denied the charge.
I'll take the hit.
Okay.
An Iranian spy who also lied about weapons of mass destruction. So he's put American lives into jeopardy on two counts, and they believed him. George Bush believed him by being pushed by Rumsfeld, Pearl, Wolfowitz.
Cheney.
Cheney. And Spieth. All these guys, this was their guy, and now he's going to, is he going to apologize for him again? What's he going to do? If he were Clinton, he would be out of office. This is an impeachable offense.
Well, domestically, it's also pretty important to try and find out who the alleged drunken U.S. official is who passed him the information. Because if this guy is found guilty of any kind of under-the-influence indiscretion, he probably would be stuck, he or she, we should say, would go behind bars. I mean, the last time this similar thing happened was Robert Hansen, right, who was the FBI spy, the one who was jailed for life for giving pretty much similar-sounding information to the Russians.
But
gave them secrets.
What if these guys knew? I mean, these neocons, Rumsfeld put together this place called the Office of Special Plans, which was an internal intelligence, like a shadow intelligence agency that was basically, as Riley said earlier, was designed to give them the intelligence they wanted. Not necessarily intelligence that was real or true or based on fact, but the intelligence that fit their plan. And Chalabi gave them that, and that's how it all started to unfold.
Well, this Office of Special Plans became a funnel of intelligence separate from the Defense Intelligence Agency, whose job it is to feed intelligence to the defense secretary, and separate from the CIA. And that, folks, is the root of the beef between Chalabi and the Central Intelligence Agency, because when his lawyer says, and I'm quoting here, Let's see. Where? Oh, okay. The leak on Iran came from, quote, the same individuals within the U.S. government who have undermined the president's policies in Iraq and are using Dr. Shalabi as a scapegoat for their own failures. Now, that's from his lawyers. Who do you think they're talking about?
That little group of neoconservatives. You're talking about Wolfowitz.
No.
Freeth, no.
George Tenet. The head of CIA. That's who they're talking
about. Shalabi's gunning for Tenet.
Yes. That's and it's been a beef from day one.
He feels like Tenet set him up because...
Because he had a separate back channel of intelligence information to Donald Rumsfeld, and now suddenly it's been disrupted.
Oh, that's right. He claimed that he was a victim of their smear campaign.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
So now the CIA is probing Shalabi.
The CIA? The FBI? The FBI is running around Foggy Bottom in the Pentagon... giving people lie detector tests.
So the FBI is probing Shalabi.
Yes.
And Condi Rice says that there will be another... there's a lot of probing.
There's a lot of probing.
A lot of probing. Someone needs to probe them. Someone needs to probe Dick Cheney.
By the way, the Iraqi National Congress, and they don't say how long a period this is, but guess how much money they got from the U.S.?
Millions.
Probed.
40 million.
No.
40 long,
40
you're right.
Ka-ching. He read his notes.
Score one for the comedian. Yeah, $40 million. And they say $40 million over the years because they really don't want to say how many years that was. Because if it was only like 4 years, that's $10 million a year.
Did he pay U.S. taxes on that? That's what I want to know.
This is for the INC?
Yes.
It's unbelievable. That's unbelievable. And now, you know, and also talking about all the probing that's going on, Bush hired a lawyer just in case he's probed.
Just in case he's probed in connection with who leaked that CIA name.
Yeah, they're not afraid to leak spies that are working against them. But, boy, they certainly will protect spies that are working for them, won't they?
Now, you know, this is a very scary piece in Newsweek. Actually, it's on their website. Michael Isikoff is one of the co-writers. That talks about the whole Shalabi thing as being the tip of the iceberg. And that, in fact, he had been feeding faulty intelligence before the actual war began in Iraq.
Yeah.
That this guy has been, you know, feeding information, again, through all of these different folks who have been backing him, whether it's Pearl or Wolfowitz or whoever, and that they have actually, the United States has actually been paying him for this intelligence for well before the Gulf War.
And now he's, the weird thing is that, if that's true, that might be the tip of an iceberg, but there's also the tip of the Abu Ghraib iceberg, which we didn't get. These guys are really good at trying to hide icebergs. And my fear is that, you know, if they're setting him up, if Shalabi is taking the fall for, you know, because he's the only one that they can, you know, push out, they might have known all this stuff, the neocons, is that, like, what really irks me is that so many Americans are willing to dismiss all of this truth about how devious and secretive this administration is just because, you know, they're fed some, like, it's going okay in Iraq now. We've got the government in. He's living up to his promises. This was a war that was based on lies. And everybody involved in it has been completely secretive about it. There's no reason for Americans to accept this at all. They should judge this president harshly. They should really be up in arms about it. All of them. I can't understand how anybody could dismiss the truth.
It is difficult.
It's unbelievable.
Sorry, Mark Riley, one thing I don't understand about what you said about the Newsweek piece is that didn't we know before that Ahmed Shalabi was giving faulty intelligence in the run-up to the war? Because he was also one of the main sources for the New York Times and all those the controversy about the Judith Miller articles.
Yeah.
And that they now, you know, just last week or early this last week, I think it was, published that very unusual letter written by the editor, Bill Keller, saying that a number of people, not just Judith Miller, were duped, basically, by faulty intelligence / lies from Ahmed Shalabi, and put out articles, some of which were used and cited by the Bush administration as evidence for going to war. I mean, the fact that they were even using newspaper articles strikes me as somewhat disconcerting.
Somewhat shady, yeah. And the Newsweek piece, and I should have mentioned this earlier, also says that he may well have linked intelligence to the Iranians before the Iraq.
I mean, those links, he has just tried to maintain that those links between Iran and Iraq are completely normal. They share a 600-mile border. Anybody who's interested in, you know, good regional relations would be communicating with Iranians. Allegedly.
Allegedly spying.
It seems to me that what he was doing was really trying to promote his own career. I mean, that, you know, he was doing whatever he thought necessary to get what he wanted done, which is that, you know, he wanted to be in power in Iraq on some level in a big way.
And he wanted to be in one of those presidential palaces.
Yeah, and he wanted to work all the angles, and he was going to work every angle he could. I think he still is working an angle.
Big power broker. But how about the U.S. official? Do you think they're actually going to find the allegedly drunken U.S. official?
Yeah, I do. I think they're going to go after. I mean, when they start going into the Pentagon and administering lie detector tests, it seems as if they're serious. I think that they don't believe they'll nail Shalaby for any of this, because he's not a U.S. citizen. In order for them to come after him, he's got to come back here.
He called us yesterday, the official.
Oh, the drunk. Yeah, I forgot. That's right. Sure did.
Yeah, I think he might be calling today.
But you know what the best news of this morning has been so far?
What?
Was when Borzu told us that essentially Shalaby's a non-issue inside of Iraq.
He also told us that Iraq is in chaos, it sounds like.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's the bad news. The good news is at least Shalaby doesn't appear to be contributing to the chaos, because nobody's really paying a great deal of attention
to him. Just another one of those, one of those guys who hasn't lived there in a long time and has no right to.
Yeah, a group of exiles. Yeah.
The other possibly good news is that al-Sistani has actually come out and given some sort of blessing, however qualified, to the new government. We're all waiting to actually hear from him. And it was a bit careful. It was basically saying, you know, let's just see how they go. But what I'm really accounting on is elections. So if they can pull that off, then that's when they'll really be legitimate. But at least we've heard from him. That's a calming influence.
You know, I have this scenario in my head. I'm wondering what happens if an elected Iraqi government, like 2 years from now, decides that instead of selling the Americans all of the oil that they have underneath, they decide to sell it all to the Chinese instead. What do you think the Americans would do?
Start walking a lot.
I just had that weird World War III thing happen.
Yeah, that's exactly my point. And it's going to come to that sooner or later. Remember, you heard it here first. The beef between America Chinese over oil is going to make Iraq look like nothing.
Yeah, buy your scooters.
That's right.
Buy your scooters, buy your spaceships. Still ahead, our Salon.com story of the day, the coming throwdown between George Bush and Pope John Paul. And up next, Dream Diary, right here on Air America Radio. Good morning. It is now 21 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. It's Morning's Edition. I'm here with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott on Air America Radio. I just crumpled up my dream diary.
Uh-oh.
I get this bad habit of crumpling things up. And now it is time, as you know, my therapist makes me write down my dreams. So I bring them in on Thursday. Today I'm bringing them. But this is last night's. Let me see if I can make through my crumpled piece of paper in my handwriting. I'm in the ballroom of a Radisson, someplace off the interstate. The place is full of guys wearing uncomfortably large name tags that say, "Hi, my name is Mark." Mark McGuire was there with a bat. Marky Mark, who walked around with underwear on his head. The Mark of Zorro, just the Mark, not even Zorro, just the Mark of Zorro. Weird, huh? And Marcus Aurelius and Mark Anthony were there, and they were, like, gossiping in Latin. And Mark Hamill was there, dressed as Luke Skywalker. I asked him why the last two Star Wars was... Why were the last two Star Wars movies so bad? No answer. And Marky Post from Night Court, fantastic. I was afraid there'd be nothing but dudes here. And a Lincoln Mark IV town car, two-tone with a white roof, was there too. And Mark Messier was there. He's a hockey player, which I don't watch, but since it's a dream, I know exactly who he is. And a couple of registered trademarks were there, the Nike swoosh and the McDonald's Golden Arches. They seemed worried about unauthorized reproductions. When Mark Twain comes up and says, "Welcome, which Mark are you?" I say, "I'm Mark Maron, I love your work, we should collaborate." Twain says, "Mark, fewer things are harder to put up with than a good example." And then he left to try out some new material on Marky Post. And Mark Riley is there, and he starts talking about Arsenal and English soccer, which I don't watch, but since it's a dream, I know exactly what you're talking about, man. Everyone's having a great time until George W. Bush shows up wearing a name tag that says, "Hi, my name is," and it's crossed out George, and with a red crayon, he wrote Mark in its place. But Twain's on to him, right from the get-go. He says, "You're not a Mark. You're that idiot who stole the election. Remove your tag and be gone, sir." And from out of nowhere, the entire Arsenal soccer team comes out and kicks Bush until he's reduced to a cube of quivering strawberry jello. I woke up and my bed was filled with continental breakfast, complimentary for all guests at the Radisson.
See, we knew that football hooligans had a place.
Yes, yes.
Finally.
Wow.
Use.
What a dream, man. I've got to stop taking that melatonin. It's really screwing my head. Okay, our guest here, President Bush, will be in Rome Italy tomorrow to celebrate the 60th anniversary of Italy's liberation from Nazi occupation. And he also plans to meet with the Pope, John Paul II. In our Salon.com story of the day, Norman Birnbaum writes about the reception Bush is likely to get. And he joins us by phone from Washington. How are you, sir?
I'm fine. I'm sure your dream was a lot better than the president's as he was flying to Rome. I think he may be there today. He's not going to have a very good time if he does look out of his helicopter. He won't touch the streets very much. One thing he's going to see is statues covered with hoods. With hoods.
Are they doing that?
Yeah, they are. The police can't possibly tear them all down. So the Italians have a good sense of theater.
So it's a protest for the Abu Ghraib?
Of course.
That's unbelievable. That's a tremendous thing. So he's not going to get such a warm reception in Rome, is what you're telling me.
That's one way of putting it. That's the English understatement of the week. I think Berlusconi will greet him warmly, but Berlusconi and some of his fans. But the rest, particularly in Rome, there are going to be demonstrators in the streets. Some of the legislators and indeed important political leaders of the opposition are going to stay away from the reception in his honor. And he's certainly going to get a very frosty reception from both the president of the Italian Republic.
So why is he even going? It sounds like they don't even want him there. Is he just trying to kiss some ass or what?
I don't know. First of all, the 4th of June is the anniversary of the liberation of Rome by Allied, predominantly American forces. So it's a mark of history to go. Secondly, I think he may have thought he could get some hustle up some Italo-American and votes by going to Italy. Many Italo-Americans like that kind of thing, though I'm not sure that all of them know very much about the modern New Italy, which is very different from the one their grandfathers left.
What about the Pope? The
Pope is very much against the war, and the Pope's personal envoy to Bush, Cardinal Laghi, who's one of those 80-year-old wily Vatican diplomats like they that only the Vatican produces. Well, he's only been a diplomat 60 years. These guys have seen everything. He was the papal legate here.
Wow.
And he had to one of the awful things he had to do was when he was here, his residence is right opposite the Naval Observatory where the vice president lives. Can you imagine living opposite Dan Quayle for all those years?
Just watching him play with his little slap paddle with the ball on it?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, it would try anybody's soul, particularly the Cardinals. But at any rate, Laghi has given a sensational interview, which the American press didn't pick up. Maybe most of our correspondents in Rome don't know exotic languages like Italian. But he gave this sensational interview to the Corriere della Sera, New York Times of Italy, and he said, in effect, the Pope's going to tell President Bush that the United States must rejoin the human race. And it was pretty strenuous, and he said they have to have you can't violate international order. Things must be done through the UN. The Mideast peace process must be started again because the real beginning point of terror is the conflict between Israel and Palestine.
Wow.
A lot of things that the White House would be, the president would not like to hear. He certainly doesn't hear them from his own staff.
What, you think he'll take the Pope seriously or it'll have any impact on him?
I heard one of your colleagues has a therapist. It would take a battalion of therapists to make George Bush listen to anything outside of what his own conceptions are. But he'd better take the Pope seriously because the Pope speaks not alone for himself or for a large segment of world Catholic opinion, but I think he represents particularly a European and a sensibility, let's say, which really has just had enough. These people, the Pope himself grew up in occupied Krakow by the Germans, had to endure the very strange coexistence of Catholics and communists in communist Poland. I mean, he knows what it's all about.
It sounds like that, you know, they've definitely had enough of them. I really appreciate you being with us, Norman. I'm sorry we didn't have more time, but we've got to move on. You can read Norman's column at Salon.com. It's called The Accidental Pilgrim. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, he was good.
He was great. Very funny.
Straight ahead, the lawsuit that killed Ladies' Night. Recovery Corner, plus you on the phone. This is Air America Radio.
Yay, it's morning. It's Thursday. I'm Mark Maron. This is Morning's Edition. I'm here with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott on Air America Radio. If you heard a wolf howling during our ad, it was because I put my headphones down on the machine. Excuse me, I just belched. Sorry, man, it's going to hell here now.
I'm in a handbasket.
That burp was on the board, too. I just pushed the burp sound on the I'm sorry, they just put all this food in and stuff, and oh man, what are we gonna do? I don't even know where that noise is that I actually. It's got to be right. Oh yeah, okay. If you heard that during the healthcare ad, it was because I'm an idiot. So there's some sort of weird politically correct backfire thing going on in New Jersey.
Well, in New Jersey, in the Garden State.
Tell me, it's like...
Where I live.
So the state's top civil rights official has ruled that taverns cannot offer discounts to women on ladies' nights, agreeing with a man who claimed such gender-based promotions discriminated against men. This guy's misunderstanding the premise of ladies' night. It's not so the ladies get some sort of fair, you know, a better deal than the men. It's so... The ladies get drunk and find the men
there.
More attractive.
Yeah, that's
I mean, you don't got any moron has known that for years. So I don't know what this guy's beef is. See, this guy is what you'd call a committed alcoholic. All he sees is that there's something unjust about women being able to drink 2-for-1 or getting any break when I come here every night. I'm paying top dollar for top shelf liquor to feed my monkey so I can live with myself. But one night a week, the dames got to cut in, and they get a deal, and I'm a regular here. I mean, I drink here all the time.
You know, you're starting to sound like Tony Soprano. You're starting to go Jersey on us over here. But that's essentially what did, in fact, happen. J. Frank Vespa Papaleo, guy with four names.
Get to a meeting.
He's the director of the State Division on Civil Rights. He rejected arguments by the Coastline Nightclub that the ladies' nights were a legitimate promotion. And, according to Mr. Vespa Papaleo, commercial interests do not override, quote, the important social policy objective of eradicating discrimination.
You know, I'm with the governor here, James McGreevy. He said it was bureaucratic nonsense. You do have to wonder, have they managed to make, and you live there, Mark Riley, is there such perfect racial and sexual equality through the whole of New Jersey now that they have to concentrate their efforts on ladies' night?
Well, this was in response to a complaint, so they have to obviously deal with the complaint. But actually, New Jersey is the most diverse state in the country.
Can they dismiss the complaint? I mean, it depends. apparently, judges in Pennsylvania and Iowa have decreed that similar events are illegal. You can't have ladies' night in those two states either. But courts in Illinois and Washington have allowed them because they say they don't discriminate against men, but they encourage women to go out and have fun.
And get drunk.
I don't know.
And be nice to men that they wouldn't ordinarily be nice to.
They remember they outlawed happy hours because there were just too many drunk idiots everywhere. You know, it was like 5 o'clock, you get 2-for-1. We used to go because when I was starting out as a comic, you know, you didn't have much money. So we'd go to happy hours just because we could eat for nothing and have a soda. You know, you could nurse a soda and eat all the free buffet food.
Yeah.
But they outlawed those because they were encouraging people to drink at like 4, you know, and party. And then there was this weird influx of guitar acts into the comedy industry because they used to be happy hour. But anyways, I'm getting away from the point. The point is that ladies' night was designed to encourage men to come and hit on drunk ladies.
That's right. Yeah. So, guys, if you want to sleep with women who have had, you know, 29 strawberry daiquiris, then go right ahead. Otherwise, boycott the clubs.
Or else go to Tijuana, Mexico.
They don't need any encouragement. Yeah, right. They're doing that, and they're taping it.
This is going to make for some very interesting times at the shore this year down in Jersey. Because, you know, ladies' nights are a big enticement, you know, in places like Belmar and Wildwood and places like that, where they have a lot of bars, where they have a lot of ladies that come down as tourists or whatever. And they have a lot of horny gentlemen who can't figure out any other way to get with them.
I think it's good. There should be, in each town, there should be one ladies' night bar.
It'd be a different issue if a woman brought this up. It'd be a completely different issue. So we want to hear from you, ladies out there, if you could. Is ladies' night sexual discrimination? If so, who's being discriminated against? Women? Men? Both? What is up with this? Could you call us? 866-303-AAR0, 866-303-2270, and we'll have the Presidential Daily Briefing and much more here on Air America. Forty-one past the hour, turning into a pretty good morning. It's Morning Sedition. I'm here with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott on Air America Radio. And right now it is time for the Presidential Daily Briefing. This is the highly classified top secret document across the George W. Bush's desk every morning. Today's PDB from the intelligence community is titled Republican Lawmakers Question War Budget. Mr. President, it has come to our attention that Republican Senator Ted Stevens of Alaska is insisting that the next $25 billion spent on the war on Iraq is actually spent on the war in Iraq. This kind of petulant nitpicking about how your administration decides to spend the taxpayers' money is handcuffing your ability to prosecute the war on terror, especially when this installment is only a paltry $25 billion. There weren't these kinds of strings on the first $170 billion. What would happen if every future war dollar had to be labeled Iraq or Afghanistan or Syria or France? Particularly disturbing is the fact that these objections are being raised by a Republican senator. Dissension in the ranks cannot be tolerated, especially during an election year. We believe that circulating photos of Stevens in the arms of a transvestite prostitute would send a strong message to any weak sisters in the party. We have the boys in Photoshop working on it now. Respectfully, Office of Homeland Security. The number, 866-303-AAR0, 866-303-2270. We're talking about, is ladies' night, getting rid of ladies' night, what does it mean to men and to women? Is it politically incorrect? Is it BS? Is it? Okay, I almost burped again. I'm like, this is going to turn into just the kind of show that father turned off last week.
That's right. No more
Sammy
coffee Faye for
Starlight
you.
On the air. All right, here we go. Diane in Manhattan. Diane?
Yes.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, great.
What's on your mind?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious. As a woman, I feel women make a lot less money than men on average, so maybe it's a form of reparations.
Oh, wow. That's new. I hadn't thought of it that way.
That's a nice way to look at it. We'll try and we'll see if what the men think about that.
Wow. Thanks. Reparations.
So she's saying that ladies' night is a form of giving a little back.
Well, yeah, and I mean, depending on how much women can drink. And I tend to think women kind of handle their liquor a little better than most men do. I mean,
well, I don't know. Is that true, really?
It's just anecdotal. Just my own.
I was always just got more to lose by getting blind drunk.
That's true. My wife is one of these people. Like, when I was drinking, I was always the drinker. When I was married the first time, she wasn't really a drinker. And this one, when she did drink, always had to be careful because, you know, women don't want to be in that position where they're too drunk and they wake up and they're on the internet, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, Joseph in Oklahoma. How are you, Joseph?
Well, I would totally buy the reparations argument if they wouldn't get so sloppy that they'd come on to gay guys.
Because
I am tired of that crap.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Okay, now, I don't live in a place where if I want to hear the kind of music I want to hear, I have the luxury of picking from. you know, some bi bars, some gay bars, some straight bars. I live in Oklahoma City, so if I want to hear any music that contains guitars at all, I've got to go to a somewhat mixed crowd.
Yeah.
And I am sick of sloppy chicks feeling like, I'm drunk, I got a tube top on, I get to feel your ass.
Have you ever decked any of them?
No.
You ever bought any of them
in
breakfast?
In fact, I usually sit them down, try to sober them up, and give them a hardcore left-wing feminist argument.
Have a little self-respect, lady.
You know, I consider myself firmly, way firmly on the left. I'm just to the right of Che.
Yeah.
But this business, it's nonsense. It's exploitative.
It's exploiting you. Your self-respect is when women with no self-respect try to control you.
It does make it easier for me to get my girlfriends to come along to go hear, like, rockabilly or something.
Yeah.
But generally, I'm against it.
Okay.
Because they don't get as aggressive to the straight guys. They hit up all on the cute ones, and I'm sorry. I am fine.
All the good ones are taken.
Heaven forbid he should be flattered.
Thank you, Joseph.
We love you, Sue Ellicott. We love you, love you.
Oh, they love you, love you.
There you go, Sue.
Thank you. I won't fill him up. Don't worry. He's safe.
866-303-2270. 866-303-AAR0. Thank you, Joseph. Lita in New York. How are you?
Hi.
Hey.
I think that ladies' night is to the advantage of men also, because they can buy their ladies a drink for cheaper, and also if they want to buy a lady at the bar a drink for cheaper, it's to their advantage. They're not being discriminated against.
That's absolutely right. Thank you very much. She took the other angle, which is the financial angle.
The financial, the reparations angle.
I read an article of somebody on the internet who was writing about this. He said he went into a place and the woman had to pay $1 and he had to pay $3, and the way they figured it out was that he just got his friend to give him $1, so it was $2 each. That's what people have to
go in
and figure it out.
All right, how about Howard? Howard, how are you?
Yeah, I was saying that I think this might be a corporate scam to put the little guy out of business. These guys who run on these bars, just kind of making their living.
Yeah.
And these big companies that run these corporate dating services, they're trying to get you to come along and, you know, spend your $40, $60, $80 until you find Mr. or Miss Right.
Oh, so you think it's a pretty well-organized conspiracy, just a scam.
I think it's another one of these, you know, corporate conspiracies, and we'll find down the line. I'm sure somehow it's got to be Halliburton's behind it. I know it.
This is just so great. I could never have thought we were going to hear conspiracy in the same segment as Ladies' Night being banned. But that's
the Illuminati. The Freemasons want no more Ladies' Night.
But you know what? He sounds like one of those guys that goes to those bars where they charge like $20 for a glass of water or something.
Well, he could very well be right if there was any evidence or proof of any kind. But no, I understand what he's saying. He's saying that they're trying to, that computer dating services are trying to put out the guys out of business in the bars and keep it at home.
Oh, okay.
It was kind of complicated. What do we got now? Glenn in Long Island. Glenn?
Hey, good morning.
Hi.
Hey.
How are you?
Here's the part everybody's missing.
What?
If the bar would offer a men's night also, there's no gender bias.
Right, isn't every day men's night at a bar?
Well, you would think that, but they don't get the discount.
Oh, that's true. Okay. That's
There are happy hours in a lot of bars.
I thought happy hours were outlawed, not here?
Not in New York.
Oh. Isn't Ladies' Night a bit of a cattle call, though? Because if you're a woman and you want to go out and get someone up at a bar, why would you go on Ladies' Night when there'd be tons of other women there? Don't you want to go on a night where, you know, your chances of, you know, scoring are better, so you have to pay? Isn't it worth it?
I'm too busy trying to figure out the conspiracy.
I mean, you guys know this stuff.
I'm listening to Sue, but I'm like, sure, like, okay, how is Halliburton involved with this?
I would guess that a lot of women go to Ladies' Nights, maybe even in groups, not necessarily to score, but just to get drunk.
No, that's true.
Get
their heads bent. Women want to go out on their own, and they feel protected in groups. Drink a lot, right, not much money, and they don't want to bother with the guys.
I got a feeling this guy wants to buzzkill. Hey, Jim, what's going on, Jim? How are you?
Hi, how you doing?
I'm okay. What's on your mind, buddy?
Well, you know, I mean, for the most part, I kind of think it's unfortunate that we have people that high up in any form of government in this country with everything that's going on that are that worried about this issue.
Absolutely.
I mean, this is asinine. We have some pretty serious problems. And by the way, it's nice to have you guys on the air so that there's hopefully some common sense out there.
Thank you so much.
We try.
I got scared, Jim, when I saw what they sometimes they put little bylines next to the names, and it said wasting time talking about Ladies' Night. I thought you were talking about us. I thought you were going to get on the phone and go, what's wrong with you guys? The world is ending. And
well, that's the next step. When I say people wasting time on this issue, that kind of transcends both governments as well as the air personalities. But you know what? I guess it's
and you for calling.
Yeah, see?
It's fun.
Well,
I'm
sitting here burning $2.50 a gallon gas in a traffic jam, so let's face it, I'm not doing much besides entertaining myself here.
Oh, wow.
And both hands are on the wheel, by the way.
Okay, all right. Well, thanks a lot for calling, Jim. That's
true.
Hilarious.
I mean, that civil rights division in New Jersey might think it might possibly come up with some better things to do with its time.
It always amazes me that the kind of time wasted by government in general in terms of like little weird things.
But it amused us.
Hey, you know who might call? I think the drunken unnamed official.
Uh oh.
Who again? Who tipped Chalabi or Chalabi? Yeah. We got that and Recovery Corner coming up. It's the fun keeps happening here on Morning Sedition in Air America. I know that this might offend some of you, but we're having fun. I know some of you take that very seriously. What is all this fun in the morning? I'm Mark Maron. This is Morning Sedition. You're listening to Air America Radio. If you want to buy Air America stuff, like a thong or a hat or something for your kids or for your dog, you can go to airamericaradio.com and go to the stuff section, whatever that's called. I'm here with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott. We're enjoying ourselves. My name's Mark, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Mark.
And in Recovery Morning, in Recovery Corner, I reach out to fellow 12-steppers who are trying to stay clean and sober. And as always, I'm reaching out to my sponsor, George W. George, from what I've been reading, your ship of state is one leaky boat. First, the whole Robert Novak, Valerie Plame outing affair. And now this Ahmed Chalabi mess with the drunken leaking of the secrets. Drunken leaks are something that belong at the restroom at Hooters, George W., not the White House. While anonymity is a central idea in recovery, it's not good for a government that's trying to find out the identity of big mouth officials. Dig? Okay, you probably approved the Novak leak. And look what happened there, right? You had to go run into your lawyer for protection. George W., the goal of recovery is to escape the world of lawyers and bail bondsmen and congressional investigations. After the first leak, leaks start springing up everywhere. It's like the first drink. One is too many, 1,000 never enough. Start over and give up, George W., before you go down with the ship. Do you hear what I'm saying? Get to a meeting, my friend. Remember, bend your knee before you bend your elbow one day at a time. Denial is not a river in Egypt. That's a classic. All right? Think. Do the next right thing and don't drink. That's Recovery Court. And speaking about drunks, looks like we got a phone call from the drunken source who might have tipped off Chalabi. He definitely tipped him off. How are you? What's your name?
Mark. Mark.
What's your name, buddy?
Mark. I'm a celebrity. Everyone knows me.
Why don't you tell us your name, then?
I'm a celebrity. My name is Jack.
Oh.
Jack Daniels. Yeah. I'm telling you.
So have you talked to Chalabi lately?
Yeah, we went to ladies' night. Fantastic. And there was a celebrity, and everybody bought me drinks because I'm a celebrity.
Everyone
writes about me, Mark.
I know. And everyone wants to know your name.
Everybody wants to know my name, but this is not Cheers. Everybody doesn't know my name because I lips are sealed. So,
Did you Did you get the lie detector test?
I love you.
I love you too, man. Did you have to take a lie detector test? At the Pentagon?
Yeah.
How'd that go?
I was pretty hammered. I mean, it's a test. I get nervous. I have test anxiety. So yeah. I had a drink. So. Yeah. But I had top government official, though. Security clearance. Not a problem. I took that test.
Now, are they going to be probing as well? You part of
they can probe me all day long. I won't feel a thing. I don't care. Come on in here, prober. Have a drink, buddy. I'm a probe light.
do you have any information you want to tell us about the government?
Oh, it's great. I love it. Government works fantastic. You don't have to really do anything if you don't want to, but you can just tell secrets all day long.
How did you get
a probe light? Fantastic.
How did you get the information in the first place?
I got friends, similar habits. We hang out, we like to party. People think government employees don't party at all.
Do you have any contact with the president?
I can't talk about my contacts with the president. You know, I can't tell you the when I talk to him every Wednesday
He's not
at 10:30.
Oh. He's not
what
drinking.
You did?
Is he drinking?
What did you do? What did you do?
Is the president drinking?
Yeah, I can't talk about when he drinks with me. I did it again.
Thanks.
I did it again.
Give us a call tomorrow. We're gonna.
Celebrity.
All right. We'll see you later. Oh boy. I can understand where the trouble started.
Absolutely. We're not finished, so stay with us for the next hour of Morning's Edition. Guess who's stumping for Bush? Guess what Texan is backing Kerry? The countdown to democracy and a conversation with Satan. This is Air America Radio.
Hey, I'm Mark Maron with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley here on Air America Radio. It's 6 minutes past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Today, Thursday, the president cranks up his Palm Pilot for the day, plus a personal favor to us. We've been granted an interview with the Prince of Lies himself. No, not George Bush. It's Satan. Everybody's going to be on the show. That's coming up right now. I'm joined by, of course, Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott. Good morning.
Good morning.
Feeling better, Sue?
A little better, thank you.
You sound better. You do.
Good.
Got an email here about Bush's speech to the Air Force cadets yesterday. By comparing war on terror to World War II, you know what Bush has in mind. He wants to be a four-term president like FDR. It's pretty good, right? Can you imagine Ike having direct contacts with war contractors? Because he quoted Eisenhower in his speech, and Eisenhower, of course, said, beware of the military-industrial complex. Mm-hmm. Of course, that is who's running this war. There's this whole – I wonder – I mean, Eisenhower knew his business, and he that was pretty prophetic.
Yeah, but that isn't the part that Bush quoted.
No, of course not. Why would he quote that? He even removed the word crusade. But here's a – the war on terror is just like World War II, except – there's a little list.
Uh-oh.
Except Hogan's Heroes just wouldn't be funny at Abu Ghraib.
Wow.
And two, instead of saying, I shall return, our generals say, and then I think I'm stuck here. Three, the kamikazes have bigger airplanes. Our airplanes. Four, FDR told us we have nothing to fear. Bush gave us a color-coded fear meter. Five, Rosie the Riveter's factory job has been moved to Mexico. After World War II, we created the United Nations. After this, we will dissolve the United Nations. Now we can email homemade porn to our loved ones. When people talk about bonds, they mean Barry. The locals don't seem to want chocolate and nylons. Uh-huh. Yeah, there's some differences there, aren't there? A couple. Do you know who Rosie the Riveter is, Sue?
I guess she is. Well, I just assumed that she was somebody who symbolized kind of women working in factories during the war, and all the men had gone away.
That's it.
Right.
Perfect.
Good. Glad I pass.
You did pass.
But Hogan's Heroes mean nothing to me.
Hogan!
You never watched Hogan's Heroes?
No, I didn't.
Of course, you know what Hogan's Heroes is. Come on.
No, she doesn't know. She doesn't know. She didn't watch it. The late Bob.
No, I'll tell you what I do. I watched Starsky and Hutch. I watched Alias, Smith and Jones. I watched
Dallas.
Trampas. You know, was it the Virginian?
Oh my God!
We really sent the
Look
bad ones
exactly
over there. Didn't we? What does England get? I don't know. Send them the Virginian and the last season of Starsky and Hutch.
Oh,
right.
Wow.
And
how could you not have seen Hogan's Heroes? That's ridiculous.
It wasn't on the television. I watched, Star Trek. Of course, I watched that, and I watched Randall Hopkirk Deceased. That was the one I really liked.
Who?
See, exactly. It was so bad it didn't even get released here.
And she's seen every episode of Benny Hill twice.
No, I hate Benny Hill.
A lot of British people hate Benny Hill. I don't know why, but they just seem,
Benny Hill was a genius. You don't hear that very often.
Not like in France with Jerry Lewis, right?
Oh, yeah. What's that about?
Anything could be worse than that would be the Benny Lewis telethon.
I think Benny Hill could play Shalabi in a movie if he were still alive. Couldn't he? Don't think he kind of looks like him, doesn't he?
I don't know. Well, Benny Hill looked like so many people. He was kind of like the man of 10,000 faces.
So,
but so fill me, put me in my misery. Who are Hogan's heroes?
Oh, come on, Sue. You can't be serious.
No, she doesn't know. It was a series during the 60s that parodied World War II. It parodied a Stalag. What is it? Like Stalag?
It was about a bunch Stalingrad? Of American POWs at a concentration camp, which is always a great setting for humor. And Bob Crane was Hogan. And there was Richard Lawson was the British guy. You're familiar with him, right?
Because
he's a famous
British. Warner Klemperer.
Warner Klemperer was Colonel Klink.
Klink.
No, I don't think that one got over there. I guess they didn't think that concentration camps were all that funny. But hey, I watched MASH. I loved MASH. I had a crush on Alan Alda, which my husband still teases me about. You had a crush on Alan Alda.
They didn't play it as a concentration camp. It was played as more of a fun place with tunnels and things and.
They could basically do whatever they want.
The Nazis were goofy. I'm just having a hard time that you're being serious here. I'm trying to figure
out. She's serious. She hasn't seen it. I'm telling you.
But she lived here for like 8 years. I mean, it's like
15.
It's only. 15. You lived here for 15 years. It's only on TV every 7 minutes on Nick at Night or some. I just can't. I'm not buying it. I think she's lying to us.
Why would I do that? I list all the other really bad stuff I watched.
Yeah. She admits to the Virginian. You think she would deny Hogan's heroes?
Banana right,
you're
splits.
Right. You're right.
Didn't you love that?
You're right. Our listeners are starting to think that this really has turned into a morning zoo show.
Yeah. On to the serious business of the world.
What's going on with the end?
Well, probes aplenty, which should warm your heart because you like probes.
I think. Wait a minute. What does that mean? I think I like to talk about probes, but I don't personally.
Well,
enjoy
the Shalabi scandal has instituted a number of them. Some of the Bushites. I guess history will record them as Bushites, are still backing this guy.
I like the Bushevics.
Bushevics, yeah, that's good, too. Yeah. Others are backing away. You see some people putting some distance. As a matter of fact, there was a quote from Bush somewhere about, we had a conversation. I can't remember if we had a conversation.
I
had it. Yeah, there was some, you know, so he's kind of backing away just a smidge.
Well, Condoleezza Rice did the same thing. She said in the understatement of the year that relations with Mr. Shalabi had been strained of late.
Here you go. On Meet the Press, Bush says they're not going to develop. He's talking about, I sat down with Mr. Bachchan and Shalabi and Al-Hakim, people from different parts of the country that made this firm commitment to, what is he talking about?
That they want a constitution eventually written that recognizes minority rights and freedom of religion. Now, this was in February.
Right. And then
yesterday
in the Rose Garden, they asked him about Shalabi, and he said, I haven't had any extensive conversations with him.
Well, he said, Shalabi? Like he was what's his name? He's saying McCain?
Yeah, Hastert. Ooh. He was pulling a Hastert. They're real cute, these Republicans. Are like, I'm not sure I understand who you're talking about.
My meetings with him were very brief. I mean, I think I met him at the State of the Union and just kind of working through the rope line, and he might have come with a group of leaders, but I haven't had any extensive conversations with him.
But he was at the State of the Union speech for God's sake. It's hilarious that this guy, you know, that Bush is like, he's not this stupid. I mean, they actually script him to be stupid, you know, because he was careful. Like, you know, he added that in. I just kind of working through the rope line, and he might have come with a group of leaders. And yet he named all three of the leaders very specifically who they were. They're scripting him dumb. Never again am I going to make fun of his stupidness.
What does extensive mean? More than one or two sentences? I mean, that's...
Yeah, but clearly he sat down with these three guys and had a major discussion, and then he's just playing this dumb card, and he's not dumb. The guy is a devious politician. I mean, he's trying to disregard the fact that he had an intimate and political relationship with a guy who's now an accused or an alleged spy for Iran, and also the guy who who Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz and Pearl all supported in believe they set up that, what was it called, the intelligence
the
Office of Special Plan to generate intelligence that they could use as opposed to intelligence that was the truth, and this guy was part of that, and he's the reason that we went to war on his information, an Iranian spy.
Sue, we got him. We got Marin.
We
got him to say alleged spy.
We did.
Instead of just, at 6 o'clock this morning, he was saying, spy, I don't care what anybody says.
Just because he pities me for not having seen Hogan's Heroes. It's a concession.
Well, I know. What are they going to do to me? Like, it's like, what are they going to take me to task? Mark Maron, a source of information that
a
has
left-wing
been reliable
source.
For years.
Yeah, a liberal left-wing source, Mark Maron, says.
I'm just a comedian pretending to know things.
Well, you know.
That's a quote from directly from President Bush, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm quoting the president.
Well, you know, the FBI, which is taking this whole Shalabi thing very seriously, is running around the Pentagon giving lie detector tests to various people because, as Sue pointed out last hour, it is just as important to the government that they know who leaked the information to Shalaby, as it is that Shalaby actually did pass the information on.
Because they want a scapegoat as well. They want somebody, and they want
not just Shalaby.
No, not just Shalaby. I mean, I don't know whether they'll ever get Shalaby, given that they've kind of used, you know, they've played him kind of both sides. I mean, it's very hard to pin down Shalaby, but what they have to, who personally have to go after is the man or the woman, the U.S. official, who allegedly leaked the information to Shalaby. And it'll be just like with the Edward Gray prison stuff. They'll be pushing to show that that person is brought to account.
By the way, you know, we look and see how Bush has flip-flopped on Shalaby. John Kerry met Shalaby in London in 1998 and found him unworthy of attention back then, 6 years ago.
Smart man.
Smart man, yeah, extremely smart man.
Are you saying they're giving random lie detector tests at the Pentagon?
Well, not random. They won't say who they're talking to, and more importantly, they will not say who declined to take the test.
But teetotalers are exempt, I think.
Yeah.
It's kind of
only
I think,
the drunk,
I'm,
the known drunks.
I'm trying to play that in my head. How would you prepare for a random lie detector test? It's like, I'm not going to lie for a month so they don't detect it in my system. I mean, how
rub some of that special deodorant on your arm so you won't sweat when you start
If you drink
lying.
Vinegar, it'll erase the lies from your subconscious.
There you go.
Still ahead, the president's Palm Pilots, plus who's Don King endorsing for president?
Me.
Yeah, Riley. We'll tell you all the answers to all the questions here on Air America Radio. Past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott. A morning sedition. What a morning it's been. Chaos, excitement, intrigue.
I can't believe why you would think I was lying for not knowing Hogan's Heroes. Why would I lie about that?
I just find it, baffling and amazing. I thought it was just part of the whole sort of like, I'm British, I can't waste time with that nonsense thing.
All right.
Presidential Palm Pilot. Got my guy who hacks into the Presidential Palm Pilot. Here's the president's schedule for today. 8 a.m., wake up. Jot down any Iraqi exit strategies that occurred to me during sleep. 8:50 a.m., meet with Australian Prime Minister John Howard. Note, Australia is the one with the kangaroos, not the one Arnold Schwarzenegger is from. 12 noon, lunch with Australian Prime Minister John Howard. Remember the term Foster's is Australian for beer. 1 p.m. Thank Australia for their help in Iraq. Make a note to increase imports of breadfruit or whatever it is that they grow down there. 3 p.m. Take Ahmed Shalaby off Christmas card list. Note, go through entire Christmas card list and figure out who really should be on the Ramadan list. 4 p.m. Send congratulations note to Stephanie Herseth, latest congressional Democrat from South Dakota. Note, cut any remaining highway funds for South Dakota. 5 p.m. Pose for portrait to be used on Iraqi currency. I love that one. 7 p.m. Call new Iraqi government. Ask if they're working hard or hardly working. 7:30 p.m. Call a lawyer about deflecting blame in Novak's CIA leak. Find out what I'm supposed to forget. 8 p.m. Call Fox News. Ask them to stretch the Julia Roberts twin story until we're out of Iraq. 9 p.m. Lights out. Fall asleep counting sheep, especially the undecided swing sheep. Ah, big laughs here in the studio. Hold
hey,
on a minute. Hold on
hey.
A minute. Thank you. Thank you. Wow, this is great. Holy mackerel.
It was kind of polite, though. It was a polite.
It was building.
I'm gonna cut him off because a lot of people out there think that I'm just playing with some goofy radio fun machine. I've got a goofy radio fun machine. I'm sorry.
No, there are actually that many people in the studio clapping. That's true.
It is. Yeah. I just broke the fourth wall. For all you people that thought there were 500 people here clapping, sorry, man.
Those are just the interns on the next show.
Yeah. Right. Now, do you want to hear another...
another fun fact?
Another fun fact.
Yeah.
Another fantasy.
Yeah.
Don King supporting George W. Bush will make more black people support George W. Bush.
That's hysterical.
Now that
isn't it?
Is a fantasy.
Don King revered in the black community by millions as being a powerful spokesman.
He's a black guy in the community with millions.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. Don is, and by the way, I know him. I met him actually years and years ago when I first started in radio. I covered Don King's promotion of a fight between Jerry Quarry and Ernie Shavers.
Yeah.
You remember them?
Yeah, two I remember Jerry
from
Quarry,
way,
yeah.
way back in the day. And he had a press conference at the Playboy Club.
Yeah.
Which shows you how long ago it was. The Playboy Club's been gone for 20 years.
I could see Mark Riley getting that invitation.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy. Yeah. I'm going to put this on the bulletin board. I'm not missing this one.
Yep. Thank you, God. Don King is one of the most charming individuals for a guy who's been convicted of manslaughter.
For kicking a guy to death.
Yeah.
Kicking a guy to death in a gambling den. That, but, you know, it's not just like I hit him, I cut him, I shot him, kicked him to death. That takes a little... That takes a little time. I mean, Joe Pesci'd it, man. Like in Goodfellas, you remember how long a time it took to kill Billy Batts? Oh, my God. And that was fiction, I understand. But I'm assuming that it was close.
Well, yeah. Don is on the road.
But how good? Bush has done very badly with the African-American vote, hasn't he? Doesn't he get about 9% or something last time around?
Somewhere in that general area.
Very low.
His support in the African-American community is so low that I saw Armstrong Williams, who's a conservative black commentator, get on television the other day and say that a 20% black approval rating was a breakthrough. All right,
Which
means 80% of the black community are not with him. But if he went to 20%, that would be a huge improvement.
What would entice the black community to vote for George Bush? Why would anybody vote for George Bush?
Plenty of money.
Okay.
That's the only way you're
going to get black people. So is that what Don King's doing? He's on the road going, here's $50.
What I don't understand is that he has so much money. Has he just sort of styled himself Bush campaigner? Or has this been officially sanctioned by George Bush and the campaign crowd? And they've asked him, or he offered, right?
He's with the RNC. The reason why he's with the RNC is because he's contributed, I would imagine, a substantial amount of money. Now, Don King has also bankrolled Al Sharpton, ironically enough. They've been, you know, Sharpton actually started out working with Don King back in the early 1980s.
As what?
Kind of like his guy. They worked on the Jackson's Victory Tour together in 1984.
It's so funny that Sharpton is just like had so many different jobs and, you know, weird affiliations.
Yeah.
But, I mean, isn't it just about that Sharpton is one of the few black people Bush could get to even stump for him?
No, not Sharpton.
I mean,
Don King.
Yeah, Don
I don't
King.
Know why he's not seen as a complete liability.
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. He went to Philadelphia with Ed Gillespie, who's the chair of the RNC, and Miss America, who happens to be African-American as well. But see, apparently they must think that plays well in Philadelphia, because 4 years ago in Philadelphia, they had Brian McKnight and all of these people that came, all of these black artists that came up and performed. Everybody thought, oh, what an inclusive group of Republicans, when in fact on the floor the total delegate count was 4% black. And it's not going to be that much higher this time around, even if they get Don King and his entire family to go out on the road.
I just figured it out. Don King wants to promote the debates.
Yeah.
It's going to be a whole new approach this year.
No, the real cynical part of all this is the notion that Don King somehow represents a voting block within the black community. He doesn't. He's a lovely man. He's one of the most charming people I've ever met.
You keep saying
then
that like, you know.
He's someone to death.
Yeah.
Well, that's,
was a long time ago. He paid his debt.
But I actually had that feeling like, you know, I better watch what I say. I don't want to mess with Don King. Like in the way everything like, oh, but he's a good guy. Don's
no,
all right.
I didn't say he was a good guy. I said he was charming.
That's okay, different. All right,
he was charming to me personally. That's only anecdotal. I know about the kicking people to death. I know about the losses. Lennox Lewis sued him for like $385 million.
Did you read his quote already?
What? Oh, about
sometimes,
the bushes.
Sometimes, just sometimes, it ain't too bad to be in the bushes.
That's a play on Jesse. Because in 2000, the Reverend Jesse Jackson said, stay out of the bushes. So that's Don's way of trying to turn this thing around on Jesse. But they'll both be going to lunch soon anyway. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it seems like it is a game to most people, you know, that politics in general, even like, before I took this job, you know, I used to really, you know, think in broad strokes and really assume that, you know, there's evil and there's good. I'm sort of like George Bush in that way, but I think George Bush is evil and that there's goodness out there. I just don't know if it's going to be found. But now that I'm working in it every day and reading everything every day, it really is, especially to TV people and my producer, it's some sort of strange sort of game. It's just a big chess match. It's politics is just sort of like, we're going to do this, but we'll hang out and have lunch afterwards.
Oh, yeah, because everybody depends on everybody else. The lobbyists depend on the media, depend on the pollsters, depend on the bureaucrats.
What about the people, Mark? What about the people of this country?
You get to that later.
It's a big business, and it goes on for so many months, and it happens every 4 years. So it's a kind of it's an industry.
But the people out there, the American people deserve the truth. They deserve representatives that really stand for something. Can we get it? Is there any?
No.
You said Kerry, though. You're starting to believe Kerry.
Oh, I'm starting to buy. See, because Kerry project something that I wasn't sure he had, but now I know he does. And, you know, and I'm just talking politically now.
Yeah.
I would say this regardless of where my personal feelings were. Kerry has got, when I saw Kerry the other day on TV, I saw him almost, I visualized him talking to world leaders, meeting with world leaders, and really being credible. I don't think, and Sue's pointed this out on more than one occasion, I don't think George W. Bush has an ounce of credibility anywhere outside the United States. I really don't.
I saw footage of him talking.
He's losing it a lot inside the United States, too. But yeah. You're right, Kerry seems believable. He seems honest.
Yes.
And he seems as though he's thought about things, and he seems smart. Now, you kind of hope as the biggest, most powerful country in the world, you have that kind of a leader.
It would be nice. But, you know, sometimes you get the leadership that you don't elect. When we come back, the Liberal Agenda Plus, our conversation with the man from hell. That's right. Satan joins us here on Air America Radio.
Man, when that album came out, when this album came out when I was in high school, it changed the way people looked at the world. Mark Maron here on Morning Sedition. Mark Riley.
I'm just checking.
Sue Ellicott. Well, it's just like Van Halen just turned it all upside down, his guitar playing. They're going on tour again. I don't know. I haven't liked them since that album. we have an interesting guest. Joining us now by phone. From Los Angeles, California.
Not John Ashcroft.
Not from Los Angeles.
His ancestral home.
A former writer for Dennis Miller and longtime Prince of Darkness. Satan. Hello, Satan.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm okay.
So
early even from me.
Is it? Satan, can I ask you some questions about what did you think of George Bush's speech?
I thought it was yummy. Don't you love watching the little trained monkey die?
Can you talk louder, Satan?
Oh, I'm sorry. How's this? who's your carrier? Mine is crap. I can't get anything down here.
Oh, man.
How about now? How about over here? Can you hear me from hell now?
I can. Are the Republicans in trouble?
Well, because of you. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're making a lot of difficulty for us.
Oh,
now, I won't say I speak for all Republicans.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten them all.
Yeah. Who do you need?
I just got the good ones.
Yeah.
The really good ones. It's like collecting baseball cards. Have it, need it.
Oh, man. Who do you need?
Oh, just the customers now. We got all the main important ones.
How do you think
they have my special red phone with no dial. When they answer, they say yes.
Yeah. Oh, man, he's giving me the creeps a little bit. How about that? How do you think the war in Iraq's gone?
I think it's tasty, don't you? Yum, yum. I love it as much as I love how everyone's still fighting for its efficacy.
So, what do you think is going to happen in the election, Satan?
Well, if I have it my way, you don't really have to vote. I'll take care of it for you.
Yeah. Do you think there's going to be a terrorist attack?
Well, I'm working on that one, kicking it around in my head. Yeah. Maybe something big go bluey. Boom, boom.
Oh, man.
Mm.
Is there
the point is, whether it happens or not, the really good stuff is just how much everyone's worried all the time.
Yeah,
that's like, all I need, really.
Is fear?
Why, oh, you don't have to go out. You can just pop on the news.
Do you, is TV something you're involved with?
What a sweet, innocent question. Well, yeah, I'm not going to say which animal represents the news network I represent.
Uh-huh.
But he's a clever little boy.
Uh-huh, yeah.
He likes to hide in holes.
Yeah. So what's on your mind right now, Satan? What's the next big thing?
Well, I was thinking about you know, maybe going up with the dog park.
It seems like God has stepped into your connection.
Yeah, right.
I'm sorry, what? Can you hear me now?
Yes.
How about now?
Yeah.
What's going on in my mind?
Yes.
Well, I'm still, you know, I'm hoping to catch what Kelly Ripa is wearing today on TV.
Yes.
I love her outfit. She's very, but yum, yum.
Oh, man. So have you talked to George Bush lately?
I talk to him every day. No, but I do impressions.
Yeah. He claims that he's talking to God. Is that really you?
What do you think?
Yeah. Yeah. And like, what do you think of the Christian right? They seem to have a lot of influence right now. Do they have any influence?
They have a lot of influence.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of it all, don't you see?
Yeah.
Go out and hate everyone and judge everyone.
Yeah.
And do it under the name of the guy I set up. It's so beautiful.
Is it yummy?
It's yummy. Yum, yum.
Thank you, Satan. It's always great to talk to you on the air.
Oh, well, it's nice talking to you. Perhaps we can chat again.
Goodbye. That was, I think that was actually Satan.
He's very upbeat this morning.
Oh, my God. I
compared with usual.
Yeah, I thought that it was going to be an act, and then, like, there was somewhere in the middle there where he actually felt like Satan to me.
Particularly when the flames came out of your laptop.
Wow. Man, so Satan's on board.
He's on board with?
With all the evil. He's creating it. He's generating it.
Is there more Chalabis coming?
Is he on the axis?
He's on the axis of evil. He's all there is. He is the Dark Prince. Oh, my God.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you see that Kerryopoly game?
That's bad. That's satanic.
It's just ridiculous. The Republican National Committee is making fun of Kerry with an online satire of his well-heeled lifestyle. I mean, hey, so he's the only one who has a lot of money?
That's a puck.
Just a bit. Apparently, you believe. I don't know where you find this online somewhere. Does the Republican National Committee have a website?
They probably do.
Well, you start out with $40,000 in Kerryopoly money, which is apparently the average national household income. And after a few trips around the board, most players are millions of dollars in debt, proving, say they, that John Kerry's lifestyle is out of reach and out of sync with most Americans. Well, duh, like everybody can afford George Bush's. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, to attack Kerry, I mean, this sort of character assassination, like, you know, attacking his wife's wealth or his wealth, it's like, it's really hypocritical and to the point where it's like, it seems useless.
Does anybody want to see a list of Bush's campaign contributors and talk about their lifestyle?
Or just their family. I mean, the Bush family is, you know, is a family that made the bulk of its fortune, you know, off of the Nazis.
I mean, I think John Kerry does have to stop feeling guilty about being rich. I mean, the thing is, he stands for compassionate wealth. He's made decent decisions. I mean, you can't deny that he's very wealthy, married to one of the richest women in the country. But you know what? He's done good stuff.
But you know what? There's no way in the world a Kerryopoly game swings an election in this country. If it does,
no.
Sue, you got room at your house because I'm moving.
It's almost an inside joke. Coming up, the liberal agenda. Plus, we'll take your calls about evil. Do you think what's happening is evil? What is evil? Where does it come from? Let's get philosophical. It's 866-303-2270. That's 866. Hey, what the? 866-303-2270. Air America Radio. Right on television. Mark Maron here on Morning Sedition with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Morning.
Hey.
Good morning. We had Satan on. That was interesting. I'm going to get him to flesh some stuff out next time. And we got calls coming in about evil, what you think evil is, and also right now a new piece that we call Countdown to Democracy. As the deadline for handover power to the Iraqi people, Iraqis, approaches, we'd like to explore various issues and opportunities the Iraqis and Americans will face. Today's issue is dealing with a divided electorate. People of Iraq, the new president that you elected or had selected or had thrust upon you. That's beside the point. Well, the president is a Sunni Muslim in a nation made up of Sunnis, Shias, and Kurds, and you all hate each other. Now, the Sunnis have been the group in power during Saddam's rule. That's a problem right there. But even worse, the Sunnis are a minority. The majority of Iraqis are Shiites, who have been totally shut out of the halls of power and are now angry, resentful, and giving to venting their spleen in public. We have a similar group called Democrats. They live in specific regions called blue states. By confining them to areas along the coast, they spend most of their energies on fringe issues like gay marriage, leaving us free to actually run the country, and not incidentally, your country as well. Now you have the added problem of a third group who are also an ethnic minority, the Kurds. We find that ethnic minorities aren't a problem at all. We suggest that you hire these Kurds as gardeners, nannies, and for any other jobs you don't want to do anymore. Good luck and God bless. This is day 26 in our countdown to democracy. Live free or die.
All right.
Wow, I got to...
sounded like Satan himself.
I guess it's kind of contagious. Omar, how are you, Omar?
Hey, good morning, Mark.
What's
Mark
up, buddy?
How you doing?
All right.
Hello there.
That's good. Let me ask you a question real quick, Mark. Did you get the callback number for Satan?
Yeah, I got it.
Yeah, you got it. I guarantee you, if you plug that into AT&T or whatever wireless thing you got, I guarantee you have a callback number to the 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Yeah.
I guarantee you that.
You're probably right. He's working out of the basement over there.
Yeah, I bet he is. But I bet you one thing. I guarantee you one thing. This is how you spell evil. GEORGEW.BUSH.
Thank you, Omar.
That's how you spell evil. Love you. Talk to y'all soon.
Thank you very much. Thank you. We've got a surprise call. Reverend Al Sharpton on the line.
Good morning. Good morning.
Rev!
How are you?
What's up?
Well, you know, I've been in the business all my life of fighting evil. That's part of what a clergyman's supposed to do. I think that it is absolutely the personification of evil we've seen out of this administration. I mean, there's no way that you cannot look at the fact that when we are looking around this country at problems of health care, problems of education, and we're geared up in New York for a huge march on the fact that black men are 51% unemployed in the city of New York, largest city in the country, and they're taking toward $200 billion chasing weapons that are not there, that many of them knew were not there. If that is not evil, I don't know what is. And that's beyond partisan politics. I know many of people feel that maybe we're just partisan, this network or whatever. This is beyond partisan politics. This is wickedness in high places.
Yeah. Now, Rev, can you explain to me how your friend and mine, Don King, is out stumping with the Republican National Committee?
Well, I can't know. I wish I could. I have no explanation.
You're stumped. First time we've heard you stumped for words.
Yeah, well, I was absolutely stumped. I have no explanation. There's no way I could deal with it at all, and certainly adamantly disagree with him. And I've been defending him and he me for many years, but I am absolutely at a loss to explain this. I think what is also as telling is that when the Democrats embrace people that are politically controversial, like me or even Reverend Jackson, they're questioned. And I don't see anybody questioning their association with Don King, who's been accused of a lot more controversies than we have. Isn't it interesting that some of the right-wingers can say, oh, Mr. Kerry, how are you going to relate the shop to that Jackson? But nobody's asking George Bush and the chairman of the Republican Party how they're running around with Don King.
Yeah, he's a guy who kicked a man to death.
Well, here's a guy who they prosecuted.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to remember, this administration prosecuted him.
Yeah.
Here is a very interesting twist now. I've been attacked for having an association with King.
Yeah.
Now, they have one with King. where's the outrage?
We gave a little outrage a few minutes ago.
Well, that's why I called in, because I always believe if I'm not the one preaching, I can at least say amen.
There you go. Hey, Rev, let me ask you. I know you spoke with John Kerry a few weeks back. Are you going to? Do you have a speaking slot set up now at the Democratic National Convention?
He's invited me to speak. I don't think anyone knows their slot yet because they're working that out. I've been in constant contact with him. I've been meeting with his staff. I've made appearances. I'll be with them June 10th at the big fundraiser at Radio City. I'm on board. I think the question of beating Bush supersedes whatever differences we have. I've even said to a lot of people who've been concerned about different parts of the strategy that we ought to do that inside now because we're past the primaries. We need to win. It's interesting to me, Mark, when I was reading the history of black inclusion all during the primaries, he said, oh, no, let's beat Bush. Well, that's the time to do it. Now the very same people that told me, no, let's just beat Bush are the ones now raising the points when we're not in the general election cycle where you ought not be raising divisive issues. So I think a lot of their raising issues is more if they didn't get a job they wanted than raising the issues. You clear the party up during the primaries. You don't wait till after the primaries and start raising divisive issues. That's why I have clearly been trying to work with Kerry. In fact, at our National Action Network convention 3 weeks ago, Mrs. Kerry was the woman speaker.
Yeah.
So we are dealing with trying to beat Bush at all costs.
Are you still running for president, Reverend?
Through John Kerry. Vote for me. My name is John Kerry.
Thanks a lot, Al Sharpton. Right, thanks for joining us.
Keep fighting the evil.
All right, man.
All right.
The Reverend Al Sharpton, surprise caller.
Calling in.
Thanks to the other caller. Should we keep taking calls? Should we roll them over? Yeah, stay on the line. We'll talk to you because Al called us, Reverend Al Sharpton, sorry, called us by surprise. It's great to talk to him. Stick on the line there. Aaron. We're in the final approach for Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. This is Mark Riley. Sue Ellicott is here. This is Air America Radio. We just had Al Sharpton give us a surprise call. That was very fun. We've got a few callers online. If you want to drop us a line, 866-303-AAR0.
Not just that. We had Al Sharpton diss Don King on the air.
Yeah, 866-303-2270 for a couple of last minute calls about anything, I guess. We got Joanne in Brooklyn. How are you, Joanne?
Hi.
Hi.
I immediately thought of my definition of evil as a man who would laughingly mock a woman who begs him for her life when he has the power to spare it.
That would be our leader-in-chief, George Bush, as governor of Texas, denied, what was it?
Carla Faye Tucker,
her appeal to live, even when the Pope said let her live.
And so did Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson, a lot of his friends, but he executed her.
That's one thing this president has always done. He's always killed everybody who was supposed to be killed under the death penalty in his state in order to continually pander to that voting bloc who believes that thoroughly.
Yep.
He never, ever tried to alienate any of the evangelical right.
That's Mike. Another reason he's disliked abroad, by the way.
Yes. Mike in Long Island.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, man. What's up?
You know, you were talking about Chalabi before.
Yeah.
And how the Bush administration has blamed him for all this misinformation about weapons of mass destruction and stuff. I'd like to know, and I think the question needs to be asked, what made them believe him in the first place? You know, what did he do previously to that to give him credibility?
Yeah, well, that's an interesting question, because there was this whole bunch of them, the INC, who was, courted by the neocons to justify this agenda that they had. And, you know, I don't know. That's something that we might have
to... Well, you know what? I can speculate on part of it. They were relatively, as far as these kinds of, exile groups are concerned, they had been around for a little while. They had gone out and they had made the friends among the think tanks and the rest of these folks when they were out of power. Remember that this goes back from during the Clinton presidency. And then when the time came, when Rumsfeld and Abrams and all these people got back in government, there was Chalabi being the main conduit of information for that group of people.
And they wanted to believe him. I think that's an important thing, is that, like, why not believe him if they could use him as a fall guy eventually?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that makes the whole thing devious. And it looks like we got, let's see, Jimmy. How are you, Jimmy?
Doing, guys.
Hey, all right. Jimmy. How you doing?
Hi, my comment is I believe that the Republican Party is the all-inclusive party. Don King and David Duke.
Thanks a lot, Jimmy.
Gee,
that's a good one.
I don't know if Don would want to be in that number, but, you know, the fact of the matter is David Duke was
people,
a Republican.
That's right.
Don King is a Republican.
That's right. You know, that question that you're asking that the fellow just called in and asked about Chalabi, why would they believe in the first place? I'm going to forward that question up to the Majority Report and let them investigate it and get their bloggers on it.
Yeah.
They can do it overnight and then let us know tomorrow.
Well, they're tapped into this community of bloggers that sort of exchange information that's the, of course, the liberal agenda for today from the Streisand compound. Let's see what the marching orders are today. Get your pens and notebooks, liberals. One, urge Maxim magazine to run hot liberal ladies in lingerie spread featuring Hillary Clinton, Barbara Boxer, and Carol Mosley Brown. Two, every time Barbara comes in and goes, oh, starts a song, I always think it's her going, oh, like Homer Simpson. Two, urge R.J. Reynolds to change cigarette warnings to smoking may be hazardous to your health, but so is underfunding the arts. Three, file environmental impact statement on your decision to plant marigolds by the azaleas. Four, organize group outing to Harry Potter film for Wiccans and Warlocks. And five, take kids to Wounded Knee, South Dakota for family guilt trip. That's it for today. Thank you all for listening. Thank you, Sue and Mark. I had a great time today.
So did I.
Good.
Coming up on tomorrow's Morning's Edition, why are so many Americans opposed to having a good health care system? We'll have a mind-bending answer for you. Plus, we're going to wake up Robert Reich as we get the nation's new job numbers. That's tomorrow's Morning's Edition here on Air America Radio.